today about a two-dimensional toy model that isn't really going to be relevant for condensed matter, but I think it kind of conveys a lot of the ideas that we're trying to codify in this like procedure. First, I wanted to just kind of give a rough overview. Kevin did last time, but maybe do it again. So this is like a brief overview for the type of for this like physical phenomena that we're trying to quantify. So the usual picture for quantum field theory, this functorial perspective. So we imagine some n-dimensional theory, Z. And we want to consider space-time manifolds of the following form. So we have some n minus 1 manifold, sigma, flowing in time, like this. So this is time. And we call what the field theory assigns to this n minus 1 dimensional manifold the Hilbert space associated to sigma. And diagrams like this determine some type of operator, time evolution operator. So the time evolution operator here takes the form of the Hamiltonian, and we view this as, so I guess if this goes to some time t, this is at time 0, so this goes to something like this, the Riemann surface at time t. Okay, so we want to look at the spectrum of this Hamiltonian. So for a general field theory, I mean, this thing's going to be all over the place. We maybe have some like ground state down here. But the idea that Kevin was talking about last time is that in, so maybe for some systems where we have some like big volume limit, so large volume limit, the spectrum of this Hamiltonian kind of, we would like to study theories where the spectrum of this Hamiltonian kind of condenses towards this ground state in some like exponentially damped way. So for like some large volume limit here, we might expect something like, so we still have this ground state, but we have a bunch of now additional states that are kind of converging to this ground state. And we might possibly also have some higher modes as well, but we kind of want to throw those away for this condensed matter phenomena. So these are so things like topological insulators or something like this. This is kind of different. This is kind of different than maybe how you would think about this in particle physics. Here we view the ground state. So the ground state usually consists of some vacuum. This. But in these systems, so this is like some exponentially damped thing based on the volume, according to the volume. The kind of approximate ground states are going to be, I mean, we want them to be highly degenerate, right? So what this means is that, so these approximate, ground states are going to be our kind of our Hilbert space for this kind of fake TFT that we imagined going on in the background. So we should think of these exponentially damped states as being described by some topological theory. That's the point. And then if the theory, if H is gapped, this is especially well behaved. So this means that there's going to be some like finite, gap between these exponentially damped ground states, approximate ground states, and the next level up. So you can imagine that as we evolve in time, this picture right here, as we flow in time, fixes these ground states right here. So it fixes this toy Hilbert space that we're talking about right here. So that's in the sense that we have a topological theory. So we get some map from this fake Hilbert space to itself as we evolve in time. That's the point. What's that?
There's a lot of H's.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Hamiltonian. Okay. So, what do Fried Moore try to do? So usually a theory. So they start with some type of quantum symmetries. Of your system, so you can imagine that a lot of these systems take place on a lattice or something like that, and you might want some additional global symmetries as well. And they try to classify. They want to classify basically the moduli of these type of gapped Hamiltonians. So this space, so these gapped Hamiltonians, I'm not really describing what they are, but you should think of kind of this picture as describing a gapped Hamiltonian where we have this type of behavior. And in general, this classification is going to be really hard. So it's going to be a very non-stable type of classification where you can imagine that, this moduli of gapped Hamiltonians is going to have a lot of different components, right? Because maybe as we evolve in time, we might, have elements in this ground state that kind of jump up, and we might have also elements here that jump back down.
Like, what do you mean evolve in time? You mean evolve in the moduli theory?
Yeah, evolve in the moduli, right.
Okay.
Yeah, like things could jump. That's what I'm saying, yeah. So this is like a very like complicated, non-path connected space of gapped Hamiltonians. So the approximation that they do is they do this, so they show that this space is more than just a topological space or a moduli problem. It's actually a monoid under tensor product of Hilbert spaces. So we can take tensor product of these Hamiltonians. And then this forms some commutative monoid. And the thing that they classify, so they show that the group completion has something to do with this, with some type of equivariant K-theory. Where the equivariance has to do with this quantum symmetries that we started with. So this isn't so crazy, maybe, because this process right here of computing K-theory is also a type of group completion. So this is kind of the main result in there. So this is kind of a different direction, maybe what the conference will be focused on, maybe some talks then. But I'm not going to talk anymore about this. Yeah, great, cool. So that's enough about that. So what we want to try to do is try to find field theoretic incarnations of this phenomena, these type of gapped Hamiltonians. So the model I'm going to talk about isn't really such a thing, but it's I think a lot of the methods that a lot of the things that come up are going to be kind of reminiscent of the models that will be interesting. So what is this toy model? So we're going to look at a two-dimensional Yang Mills. So what does this mean? So we have some connection some connection on sigma with coefficients in this Lie algebra. So this is going to be, so sigma is going to be some surface. G is just going to be some Lie algebra. And we know that the Yang-Mills connection, or the Yang-Mills action, is FA wedge star FA. And if we choose a pairing on G, we can pair this guy here. According to omega. Great. Okay. So it's actually convenient to introduce additional fields and write down a classical theory that's equivalent to this guy. So in this first order formalism, we're going to put in some scalar fields that I'll call phi. So these are just some functions on sigma with values in G. And we're going to consider the following action. So this depends now on A and phi. And it looks like this. So we just take phi times FA plus, so if I wanted to put in some coupling here, which will be useful, the coupling over here looks like this. And we get something like that. And again, trace over everything. So why is this something that we want to do? Why is this equivalent to what we wanted to do? So we know that the Yang-Mills equations here look like this. And what happens down here? So when we vary A, we get basically FA star FA plus phi is 0. And if we vary phi, we get the condition that d phi is 0. And these two equations together imply the original equations of motion. So at least the equations of motion mess up classically. So what is the kind of the Hamiltonian picture for this two-dimensional Yang-Mills guy? So the Hilbert space . So since we're in two dimensions, this is going to be what we're going to assign to a circle, right? So the Hilbert space on a circle, well, this is basically going to look like L2 functions on the equations of motion. So this is going to be connections on S1 modulo gauge.
Yeah. Except that's not the equations of motion, right?
Oh, sorry. So we want probably the cotangent space of this thing, right?
You're doing too much quantization. Like,
Oh, yeah, sorry. L2 of what?
You know, we don't take L2 of the equation of motion.
Yeah.
We take L2 of, we choose a full negation.
Oh yeah, sure. But the Hilbert space I want, I think, is.
You have the way Hilbert space.
Yeah. Sorry, I said it wrong. So connections modulo gauge. And to choose a connection on S1 modulo gauge, this is the same as the conjugacy classes of G. So what we see for the Hilbert space is basically just these character functions. So the kind of physics analysis of this Hilbert space, so you want to invoke some decomposition. The Peter Weyl decomposition of this guy splits this up into representations of G. This. And what is the Hamiltonian? Oh, I'm just trying to label a irreducible representation. Should I use the different?
So it's not a one-dimensional space representation.
Yeah, right. Sorry. I'm just trying to. Yeah. Exactly. I just mean, so this bracket notation, just labeling a irrep. So what's the Hamiltonian? So we should think of A. So the Hamiltonian in any Yang-Mills theory is, I'm getting the coupling wrong, but it's 1 over C times this E squared plus B squared. E is the electric field, B is the magnetic field. In two dimensions, this guy is 0. E squared is just... so we want to look at the conjugate momenta to A. So this is like D, dA, D, dA. And maybe I'll probably be sketchy here, but so dA, if we want to choose a basis for G, XI, the pairing gives us a dual basis called X upper I. And kind of inherent in this notation is using this pairing. This guy acts on the representation by, so there should be like I things here. This guy acts by this Lie algebra element. And by tracing over using this pairing, I get basically this Casimir element, XI, like. It's like one way to write it. So the Hamiltonian, this is like 1 over C then, C. This is C times this Casimir for G. Cool. So maybe some remarks. So notice that as C goes to 0, this Yang-Mills theory approaches some topological action. So this just looks like phi dA. And this is just the moduli of flat connections now on the surface. How is this related to this this large volume limit? So if we look at this term, the only failure for this thing to be topological then is this term right here. So if we look at phi c times phi wedge star phi, this is the same thing as c phi squared times d vol, or here d area, right?
Don't
use dA again. Sorry. So like d theta d r or something, fine. And then if I want to change coordinates. So here I want to make the area really big now. So if I change coordinates to something like, say, of radius 1, going to something of radius r, like this. In these new coordinates, so these are in theta r, this is in theta r prime, this guy is going to go to basically c over this radius r, phi squared d theta prime dr prime. This. In this new coordinate. So this shows that, so all I'm trying to say is that we should think of the, if we look at our theory on just a disk, as our disk gets really, really big, the coupling is getting relatively smaller and smaller. That's all I'm trying to say. So in this limit, we're approaching some type of like topological field theory then. Don't want to say anything else. Okay. Okay. So I guess I want to step back now and try to talk about this in from first principles, basically. So this was all like. Kind of the way physicists usually think about this Hamiltonian picture, which is kind of, I guess, boring in this case. But I think it'll be useful for us to try to write this down in a language that's a bit more precise. So we're going to step back and try to look at basically the BV picture. So maybe I should say a little word about factorization first. So the Hilbert space this guy deals with states or phases. But this BV picture, I actually want to look at operators on this Hilbert space, or in other words, observables. And you know, for nice theories, there's kind of this this state operator correspondence. And maybe one way of thinking about it is as follows. So maybe back to this kind of toy picture for an n-dimensional field theory. So we have some cylinder here, and I want to place my surface sigma there. So this is giving me a map from just a map from z of sigma to itself. So if I choose a point, though, so let's choose a point x and sigma. And then t is some time. This gives me a point on the cylinder. And what I do is cut a little ball around it. So a little d ball around it. N ball, sorry. So what does this give me? So this gives me then a bordism from sigma wedge, disjoint union, the boundary of this thing, which is Sn minus 1, to sigma. So I get a map of z of this thing. This. Or in other words, I get a map from z of Sn minus 1. So these are things, again, that I would call these are where my states live, to basically endomorphisms of z sigma. So in general, this procedure is going to depend on a lot of things. So it's going to depend. So for a general field theory, it's obviously going to depend on where I am in space-time, what time I do this at. But for nice theories, say like topological theories, this map doesn't depend on anything. And then for conformal field theories, it's also well-behaved. So it only depends on like this, basically where I am in C, and it depends holomorphically. on my Riemann surface. This is this like state operator correspondence. But so where does factorization come from? So factorization comes from the fact that we can multiply observables. So what do I mean by that? So if we're in some big spacetime here, and say I have observables that are localized disjointly in spacetime, say O and O prime. These are supported on two opens, say U and U prime. This should give me some map then. So I should be able to multiply these observables in some sense. So observables on U, tensor observables on U prime. And this should give me observable on the big guy. So some big thing containing all of these. So you can make this precise, and this gives us some type of some structure on observables. And this map right here is just called factorization. So rather than talk about this in too much depth, I'm just going to try to do some examples. So let's just talk about first, let's just do the free scalar in one dimension, so on R. So what's my action? It's just given by this Laplacian here. And I want to think about this guy as being in degree 0 and this guy being in degree 1. So by definition, my observables on some open inside of R, well, these are going to be functions on the fields. So this is, I'll call this complex E on the fields on U. So the algebraic model we take for this, we really only want to look at like polynomial or things that are power series. So we look at some symmetric algebra on the dual of EU. So I really mean a topological dual here. So explicitly, so for like C infinity on R, the dual I want to identify with compactly supported things on R. And really I want one forms on R like this. And this works for any subset of R, actually. And the way I'm identifying this is the duals is that, so given given some guy, sorry. So I'm just sending some compactly supported form here, alpha. to the functional that just sends a function f to integrate against alpha, like this. What's that?
You don't want distributional things?
Yeah, I probably do want distributional things. But I'm not gonna. Yeah, for the distributional dual? Yeah. Yeah, that's what I really mean. But this will be enough to...
I'm happy to work with some of those terminals.
Yeah, that's fine too. So the first claim... is that... so. This is what I would call classical observables here. So the first claim is that these classical observables, CL, so form, these combine together to form a commutative algebra. And so maybe I should say just the cohomology of this guy. And the cohomology can be identified with just some free guy on two letters that I'll call P and Q. So really, I want to quantize. So I do this by looking at the quantum observables, which as a complex, it's just going to be the same thing as my classical guys, except I've adjoined some parameter called h bar. And then I have this, so my original differential here, so this guy just came from the Durand differential, or sorry, this guy just came from the Laplacian of this complex. So here I have this Laplacian. And then I shouldn't use delta, plus some operator that I'll call the BV Laplacian. So I'm perturbing this differential by something in H bar. So this BV Laplacian is not so bad. So what did I really mean when I was describing this field theory? So I had in mind this operator, and I also had in mind a pairing. There's some symplectic pairing on this guy. So the pairing between F and G, these are fields in here, is going to be integral FG dx. So this pairing I should think about as being an element in E dual tensor 2. You're saying I want to take compact support up here?
For short functions or something.
Yeah. So I want some nicer behavior. So I won't, maybe I won't spend too much time on the details. But,
you just take short classes
up. Yeah, so it's going to be well defined on the thing. I'll just define what I mean by this BV guy first. So this BV guy. So it's going to be, I'm defining some operator on sim. So on linear things, it's just going to be 0. On, let's look at the sim 2 part. So the sim 2 part is going to involve something like this, where f and g are these compactly supported functions now, compactly supported forms. And what I want is basically to use this pairing to give me f times g. So anyway, so you the The next claim is that, so you can also talk about the cohomology of this guy. So this is still going to be some type of factorization algebra, and it has the structure, not of a commutative algebra, but of an associative algebra. And it's equal to basically the so it's equal to this guy here, but subject to basically PQ minus QP is H bar. Yeah, power series and H bar, exactly.
When you say cohomology in the algebra, you just mean like you take it over each of the open guys.
Yeah. Yeah, you just do it over each open, right? So there's another relevant example for producing interesting algebras, and this is this enveloping construction, which is going to be relevant for this Yang-Mills example.
When you make these claims here, then you mean if you evaluate this dude on the whole R. Like, if you're still getting some kind of, like, Cauchy-type object after taking cohomology, then you mean all of R when you write cohomology?
No, not really. So I don't, so this is still some, like, Cauchy object on R, right?
Uh-huh.
But, so it's locally constant is the thing I'm not saying. So whenever you have a factorization algebra on, let's just say R, right, that's locally constant. So let's say we have some F on R. It's locally constant. So what does that mean? So if I look at the product between u and u prime, if it's locally constant, it doesn't depend, like the space itself, what do I assign to u doesn't depend on u or u prime, right? So I still get some just algebra A. This, of course, goes into some bigger guy, let's just say f of v, containing everything, right? Which is also identified with A. So I actually do get like a well-defined product on some structure I'm calling A, on some algebra I'm calling A. And the claim is that this factorization product gives this guy an algebra structure.
Sure.
Is that okay?
It doesn't really matter. The point is that in this case, like whether you take it on U or some like bigger open interval, like as long as it's a connected interval or R, like you can always identify with this algebra.
I see. Okay. So an easier example that is relevant. So so here's a construction of this of the universe enveloping of G. So I'm going to consider another factorization algebra on R. Defined by the following. So I'm going to send an open in R to this two-term complex of compactly supported guys on U, tensor G. So this is some perfectly well-defined object. It's also locally constant on R, and the claim is that FG is, so under this identification, so FG is the enveloping guy, is UG. And when I write that, I just mean this factorization product here corresponds to the algebra product in the universal enveloping guy. So this is kind of nice to see. So how would I go about showing something like this? So if I take two elements of my Lie algebra, so I can lift them to elements. So I really meant cohomology here as well. So lift to elements of FG as follows. So so FG, let's just say on some small interval containing zero. So how do I do this? So what I do is I choose a function f, zero, compactly supported on epsilon to epsilon, minus epsilon to epsilon, such that integral of f zero dt is just the unit. So then I can lift. So what do I mean by lift? So if I look at this guy, x tilde, which is going to be f0 dt tensor with x. So this is some perfectly fine object in here. In cohomology, this guy goes to x, because the cohomology of this guy is concentrated in 1 degree, and it corresponds just to Lie algebra here. So it makes sense to look at the cohomology. And similarly for y on some interval. So I can do this. So the thing I want to show then is I want to look at the basically the commutator at the level of this factorization algebra. So I want to compute the factorization product explicitly. So I want to place actually x tilde on an open here. So this just worked for minus epsilon to epsilon, but you can also choose bump functions f0. I can also choose bump functions for i1, i2, and i3 respectively. So these are guys that just integrate on each interval to 1, and they vanish outside of the interval. So some perfectly okay compactly supported function. I'll call this guy like x i1, call this guy y i2. So I want to compute what x tilde i1 is times y i2 using this factorization product here. And really, I'm taking cohomology, so I want to compute the cohomology class of this guy here. And likewise, I'll do x tilde I, oh, sorry, y tilde I2, x tilde I1. Okay. So how does this work? So when I talked about this, when I defined this factorization product, I had in mind an ordering on the real line here. So the thing that represents this guy in cohomology is just going to be x tilde I1, y tilde I2, minus x I3, y I2. So we want to see what this guy is in cohomology.
Can you discuss your pairing?
The pairing? So I just mean, so when I write this, right, sorry, I haven't, so this is some co-sheaf, sorry, I meant chains on this guy. So this guy's a cosheaf. Taking chains on it is still going to be a cosheaf. In fact, it's going to be a factorization algebra. And I just mean sim on this guy right here. And the differential, right, is given by, so the differential has two pieces, right? It has this Durand piece, and then it has this bracket piece. And when I say cohomology, I mean this. So the Lie algebra cohomology of this guy, right? Or just the cohomology of this complex here. So with respect to this total differential. Yeah. So I'm just going to choose a function h on R such that the following two conditions hold, so that so such that d Durand on H equals basically f1 dx minus f3 dx. And let's just see what happens then. And I also probably want H restricted to I2 to be the identity. So this isn't so crazy. We could prove this if you want, that such an H exists. But then I'm just going to kind of eyeball it then. So I want to show that I want to compute this guy in cohomology. And notice that if I look at, so the differential applied to H, so we have this Durand part, but then we also have this this Lie algebra part, right, coming from the bracket on this guy. So so this is going to be H tensor X times F2 tensor Y. So the Durand part's only going to hit this H guy. So I'll get this part that I wanted. So F1 dx tensor X minus F3 dx tensor X. This is all times F2 dx tensor Y. So this is this piece inside of this bracket down here. And then I'm not done, so the Lie bracket now. So this is just something in sim2. So all I need to do is compute this Lie bracket here. And that just, so the only Lie algebra pieces are here and here. So this is going to be, maybe my signs are off, but this is just going to give us x, y times h, f2, dx. Other way around. Okay. And this is just the lift of the commutator. Notice on the big guy here, because I'm assuming that H has support one on I2. So this is F2 dx. Yeah, sorry, that was a little too much details. It's going to be the exact calculation you need for this Yang-Mills example, so. I probably don't. Okay. So what's my what are my fields for? So back to 2D Yang-Mills. So what are my fields for 2D Yang-Mills?
Sorry, could you summarize why, like, what the output of this computation is?
Oh, sorry. So this shows. So I defined for you some map from G to this basically the cohomology of this to this factorization algebra, right? And I showed that in the image of this guy, the commutator for G holds. So then by the universal property of the enveloping algebra, this guy is the right thing.
Yeah, and you just wrote that the factorization product commutator and the Lie algebra commutator are different by a coboundary.
Yeah. So this is all, so sorry. Yeah, so this guy is zero in cohomology, right? That's what I meant. That was the difference.
Maybe that's obvious.
So back to the Yang-Mills, maybe I could try to say some things now. Looks like this. So this is my degree zero piece. This is where all my fields live. So I have this connection, right? This is what we're writing for A. But then in this first order formalism, I also put in fields phi in degree zero. And there's also a piece of the differential because I put in this coupling that goes this way. And this basically just multiplies by the volume times C. Okay. So what do I want to do? So there are two factorization algebras. Associated to Yang-Mills on the following type of half plane, like this. And the boundary I'm talking about is just this the line, the y equals zero line. So I have some prescribed boundary conditions here. So the two factorization algebras are going to correspond to two different boundary conditions that I'm going to choose here. So the first guy, boundary condition one, I'm going to take just to be phi is zero on this boundary. The next thing I'm going to do is take BC2. This is just A is zero on the boundary. So the factorization algebras on this, and more precisely the global guys. So what you do when you glue these factorization algebras along a circle are both going to be candidates for the Hilbert space for this Yang-Mills theory in this BV picture. So what's going on here? So remember, so this Hilbert space H looked kind of like some type of functions on T star G, modulo G. T star G now, because we've put in these kind of conjugate fields phi. What these boundary conditions correspond to are basically cutting out different Lagrangians inside of T star G. So the boundary condition one, when phi is zero, this is cutting out the zero section of T star G, and A is zero is cutting out a fiber over one or something.
Is H not that? I mean, it's that H was functions on G mod G, which corresponded to sort of like functions on one of the Lagrangians, not the whole thing.
This isn't the Hilbert space, sorry. This is functions on the equations of motion. That's what I'm saying. I did the same thing as last time. Yeah. And the boundary conditions. So the boundary conditions just are cutting out slices of the full space. Okay. So how am I getting a factorization algebra on this guy? So I'm actually getting a factorization algebra as follows. So I want to. What I do is I want to compute the factorization product of operators that are localized on the boundary. So things like this. So the way I compute this is I take out small balls that now live inside the bulk of the theory, and I compute the factorization product of observables that are localized inside of these things. Because it doesn't really make sense to do, so these factorization algebras all take in inputs open sets, so I needed to actually extend these to open sets. So the two claims the first guy, the boundary observables corresponding to boundary condition one, this has the structure, the claim is that this guy has the structure now of a factorization algebra on this line, you can think of, which is going to be locally constant, so it still corresponds to an algebra. And the boundary condition one gives the following guy, so cochains on G. And boundary condition two gives U of G. So the question is, so how does this fit in? To the usual Hamiltonian picture. So if I put these factorization algebras now on a circle, on an S1, well, the global sections of these guys, say BC1, either of them, are going to be the Hochschild homology of these guys as algebras. And HH0 of C star G, I think, gives you functions on. I'm going to get this wrong. On here. And HH0 of this guy, of UG, is functions on G star. So, this makes sense because we only were looking at polynomial observables or algebraic observables anyway. They could be infinite, they could be power series, but we don't see the entire Hilbert space, all of L2 functions. We just see some kind of like algebraic incarnations of them. So this guy, you should think of as being like, we've already said these are kind of like algebraic characters. And then functions on G star, these are like algebraic, these are like distributions on G. So I wanted to wrap up by completing the sketch of this Hamiltonian picture for BV by kind of saying where the actual Hamiltonian comes from. So where is the Hamiltonian? So the Hamiltonian should give us some operator on these observables here. So where does that come from? So something kind of subtle happens here. So there's a, there exists an action. So I'll call this guy, let's call this guy like the t direction, and this guy the theta direction. So there exists an action of dt and d theta on my boundary observables here. It's fine. But each are individually trivializable. So naively we would say the Hamiltonian is zero. Because that's how this Hamiltonian picture comes up in for factorization algebra. So whenever you have, let's say I just have like a factorization algebra on R, that's translation invariant. So I have an action of dt. The Hamiltonian is going to be an induced derivation at the level of factorization algebra. So naively, we would say the Hamiltonian is zero, but the point here is that they cannot be trivialized in a compatible way. So there's no compatible trivialization. So what's the solution? So the solution is to work over. So think about the full Lie algebra here. So these guys span a two-dimensional Lie algebra, d theta dt. So think about this guy acting on Yang Mills. This guy induces this is now a so I should think of equivalently. So equivalently, I think of this, I should say that so Yang Mills is a family of theories over the commutative algebra associated to this, so C cochains of this guy, which is just C adjoin D theta DT, where both of these guys have degree one. And at the so the claim is at the quantum level, this isn't hard to see, that this Lie algebra is still going to act. So it's still going to act on quantum observables. So this homotopy, so there is not just an action, but a homotopy action. This Lie algebra on quantum observables. Which corresponds in turn to some special Mara-Cartan element. But in the language of algebra, it corresponds to this is the last thing I'll stop with. So this corresponds to a closed element of degree 2 inside of this big algebra. So C star of this guy So the cochains on this guy, cochains on this Lie algebra is this dude, and then tensored with the homotopy morphisms of this algebra here, otherwise known as Hochschild cochains on OBS, where I'm identifying the factorization algebra with these algebras I had over here. So here's another nice fact, is that both of these guys So for both boundary conditions, HH0 is the center of UG. And this comes from this fact that I don't think is so trivial, but HH0 of UG is the same as HH0 of C star G. So the degree two element then is going to be the functional involved, this action functional involved d theta dt, so it's no surprise why this guy's coming up. And then it's going to tensor with some element in H0 of this guy, which I'll call script C. And the claim is that this script C is the Casimir for G. So we've recovered the Casimir by studying the action of translations, all possible translations on Yang Mills, which corresponds to this action at the level of quantum observables. So it's kind of a nice picture, I think. Yeah, so that's probably all I wanted to say about Yang Mills. Should we stop?
I have a ton of questions, but maybe we can just chat later.
Yeah, sure.
Does anyone have other questions?
Sweet.
Okay. So I think the plan is, so next week, probably me, possibly Brian, I think we'll give a lecture on sort of a more interesting theory in 3D that sort of exhibits this behavior where you have, this is gapped, right?
Yeah, so maybe I should say, so this is a nice example because, this kind of naive Hilbert space that Kevin talked about. So the naive Hilbert space given by the factorization homology on S1 of these quantum observables. So I think he wrote this as like, this naive Hilbert space actually gave us the right one in this example. But there should be more interesting kind of non-local examples in this 3D, 3D Yang Mills should kind of be a way of measuring this this discrepancy between what we would call the naive Hilbert space from this BB formalism and the actual Hilbert spaces. So the thing we really want to look at is 3D Yang Mills. So yeah, maybe I'll just say that. So the example we want to try to work on for next time, which is a lot more interesting, I think, for condensed matter, maybe. So it involves looking at some theory where I have some Chern-Simons functional. So this is a three-dimensional theory now. So some Chern-Simons functional, and I add to it some Yang Mills functional here, like this. So maybe we can do first order for Yang Mills here, and then in some limit we should be getting some topological theory which is going to look like Chern-Simons plus this kind of phi dA term or this like this BF term. So the topological theory in this limit, in the weak coupling limit, is going to look like Chern-Simons plus some like BF theory, like this. So the Hamiltonian only comes from this this Yang-Mills part, and we'd like to try to study what the boundary quantum observables are here. So they should correspond to like Katz-Moody algebras in this example. And the Hamiltonian should be a lot more interesting. So it shouldn't exhibit this kind of like, the Hilbert space, so the Hilbert space shouldn't kind of exhibit this behavior where the it's actually just given by piecing together these local observables. So there might be some like non-local effects, like Kevin was saying. But yeah, trying to quantify that I think would be a project in itself.
That's the rough plan. So maybe we'll talk about this, or we might move towards bring the backup plan is to sort of give a little bit more overview of sort of what Dan Fried and Greg Moore did. Right? Mm-hmm. So maybe talk about actually sort of how their mathematical sort of classification works.
So. Sweet. Yeah, that would be a good idea too.